Live broadcasts. Live.
Now broadcasting the webcomic Beacon.
Hello and welcome to the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com. I'm Fess of Fessworks.com, and with me we do have both of my co-hosts today, starting with Mark Savory of AutumnLake.com.
Hello.
And Tanya Higgins of DaisiesAndShit.com.
Hello, hello.
This is episode 112. Man, it's been so long. And this week we're talking about, well, comic reviewing in general, and we have a special guest this week, somebody who's not on here because of webcomics, but because of their comic reviewing, namely Linkara of Atop the Fourth Wall. Welcome to the show.
It's good to be here. Are you saying that just because I'm a comic reviewer, I am not usually worthy of being on a webcomic podcast? This is an outrage. Well, I'm going to go now.
Bye.
I like you.
I mean...
I think we've touched a little bit here and there on comic webcomic reviewing in general, and I was trying to figure out who could we get on the show to talk about webcomic reviewing, and after a lot of searching around, is like I wasn't entirely sure who I could get on, and then I thought, this was about the time after I don't remember when I actually thought I should do this, but as soon as I was thinking, wait a minute. If I could get Linkara on, that'd be so cool. It's like, then I contacted him, and I'm like, you're like, you know, I've been on the show before, Fast. And I was like, what?
It was in the before time.
Yeah.
See, long, long ago.
See, because we had you on the show as Lewis before, and
yes.
I'd never recognized that. I remember seeing the credits of your show, and it's like, Lewis Lovehog, dude. Why is that so familiar? And I'm looking at your old blog, and it's like, I know what the avatar is. I've seen that before. What is that, too? And I couldn't put two and two together. It's your Lewis from The Lightbringer.
Yep, Lightbringer and Crossover Lord. And you had me here along with Neil and Al and
yep.
I think Remus, too, when we were promoting Crossover Lord.
Yeah, so that's, embarrassing for me, but...
Oh, it's no big deal. Although, what's funny is I said at the end that I would promote the podcast on my blog, and you were like, okay, whatever.
Well, see, I don't recall that. I might have just not heard it right or something.
That's really fine. I mean, if you had no idea who I was, it would be like, okay, the guy's promoting on his blog. Okay, that'll get like 5 or 6 hits.
I do have another question for you, though. Okay, you're in Minnesota. You were at Minnesota Fall Con. Did I have you on the show before or after I met you in person?
I think it was you had me on the show before that. I'm pretty sure I met you after that point, after the podcast Fall Con, but I didn't know it was you.
Really? Because
I think so. I mean,
I was going around doing like interviews
in October, so I can't remember exactly.
I was going around doing interviews. I got like 3 MP3s on the Webcomic Beacon site of all the various webcomic interviews. I wanted to interview you, but you were getting like so much traffic at your table. So
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. At the time, I was also promoting the latest episode. I was giving a sneak preview for the one that was coming out that week.
Right.
So it was gathering a crowd.
Yeah, when I showed up, the one that was playing was was it Snowblow or something like that? With the cocaine.
Snowflame.
Villain? Yeah, Snowflame.
Snowflame, the man powered by cocaine.
So for webcomicers that are listening to our show, like they've regularly done, for people who don't know, this is Linkara from Atop the Fourth Wall, which you can find at thatguywiththeglasses.com. Is there a quicker way to get to your site?
Not really. most people, I really have to find a way to make a shorter link, like at4w.blogspot.com or at4w.com or something like that. But otherwise, yeah, just that, or go to thatguywiththeglasses.com and I'm in the drop-down menu under Linkara. You can watch my show, my show that people seem to like about me making fun of crappy comic books.
Yeah, so we have a non-webcomic reviewer on the show, but that shouldn't matter because, you know, a comic is a comic, and how you look at it is going to be, you know, in the eyes of the reviewer, too. But, what I really love about your show, I don't read trade comics, but I love how even the professionals are not professional enough, and you're looking at them, it's like there are web comics way better than some of the stuff you're reviewing.
Oh yeah, I actually get requests all the time for people asking me to review web comics, and I have to turn them down for various reasons. The most requested one is Sonichu. People really want me to do that one.
Oh god.
Yeah.
I'm ashamed that I know that it exists.
I was gonna say I have no idea.
That's fine. Don't look it up.
Okay, I can do that.
You will feel sad and ashamed after you discover a Sonichu.
Should I ever feel the need to be sad and ashamed one afternoon, I'll look it up. But until then, I'll spare myself.
Yep. But yeah, pretty much the primary reason why I don't tend to review webcomics is that most of them are not for profit. They're a hobby people do. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a really big asshole making fun of people for doing something they do in their spare time.
Plus, love.
And most many of them are sort of transitory as well. They don't seem to last very long. Mm. So there's not a lot of longevity.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean there's not always a lot of longevity with some comics. Mm.
But it would be kind of hypocritical considering when I started Lightbringer, I was totally sucky. People will probably say I'm still sucky, but when I started, I was preachy and stupid. My artwork was terrible, and I used Comic Sans, and you know, all the beginner's mistakes. And it'd be like, oh yeah, well, okay, you're reviewing this comic and saying it sucks, but there, look at what you did.
Yeah, but I'm self-aware, and I'm not receiving a cent.
Although these days, Lightbringer, I have the talented art of Chad Rocco at my disposal, and so now I can focus purely on writing, and people will probably still say it sucks, but at least it doesn't look bad.
Comic Sans is the sparkly Twilight Vampires of fonts. It's just wrong. It should never be used. Just saying.
Oh, God. Well, they're releasing a manga of Twilight. I heard.
I have it on reserve at my bookstore. I've been meaning to pick it up.
Are you going to review it?
I'm thinking about it, and I need a copy if I'm going to review it. Although the thing is, it's only volume one. It only covers like half the book.
Oh no! Oh no!
Maybe the art will make it better.
Oh god!
No, it won't.
Well,
it's done in a pseudo manga style, and it's like,
sort of chibi sparkles. I don't.
There's stop.
See, I should warn you, Tanya. Well, I don't know which room we're going to be doing this in, but apparently Jason and David, maybe, and a couple of us are going to be maybe MST3K-ing the Twilight movies at TangoCon.
You know, I'm sure I can find something else to do because it wouldn't be very humorous to just hear me screaming like a mad woman in the background.
Actually, I think it would be hilarious.
See, the only problem with that,
Break Dawn the movie, I can't wait at all. I really want it to come out to see what they do to it.
Oh god.
And if you know what happens in Breaking Dawn,
doesn't she get raped or something?
No, I don't know about
she
that
gets
part,
killed.
But Edward has sex with her so hard it knocks her unconscious. Yes.
Oh my god.
Also, her baby grows at an accelerated rate, and the werewolf guy apparently imprints on her or something, and they get married. Yes. I really want to see how if Hollywood would even be willing to translate this into an actual film, because it will be gloriously awful.
I don't see why not. Really, they've already glorified this hideously abusive relationship in you know, full flesh. So just keep going. Just take it to its inevitable conclusion. Just until somebody finally kills her. Just and then make it romantic. and then we'll be done with it.
I would like to apologize for any of our devoted listeners who actually do love, or whatever Twilight series, because I don't want to lose you as listeners, and I know at least one of them. But then again, I'm going to be seeing the movie, and I'm going to be well able to comment on it without just everybody saying stuff about it. So I'll see it firsthand. But
the only trouble is you've got to sit through it.
I know. I know, which is why we're going to be drinking.
Oh, okay. So. Oh, well, that might help.
See, there's another reason I
alcohol
just need to
solves
not
be there. All the life skills.
I have no buffer. That's my problem. I don't drink anymore. Without a buffer, I have to actually see the horridness for what it is.
The horrid. If I got drunk enough, I wouldn't be able to see it, and that would be ideal.
That would probably be better.
It's win-win in that case.
All right, so this episode's about comic reviewing.
Oh, and,
right.
That's right.
And
comics.
So, how did you start doing your comic reviews? Like, give us like a rundown the history.
I've seriously got to let's like write a song in order to respond to that question as many times as I get it. The way it started out was I started doing text reviews based off of the style of the Agony Booth or Jabutu's movie reviews. And from there, I just did it to review comic books because I figured there was an untapped market there. From there, I tried to do it weekly, but it took a lot of work and effort to recap everything and collect it, especially for something that I wasn't making any money on. Right. So eventually, it became every once in a blue moon. And then around that time, that guy with the glasses started holding its contest for an Ask That Guy contest. It's a show. Ask the guy questions, and he responds in the most disturbing and nonsensical manner possible.
Right.
And I did a contest, basically, hey, or do it your own way, answer these questions. So I did that. I had a lot of fun with it. So from there, I made a video review of a comic, and I've been doing it ever since. People seem to like them.
Let's see here. I think. What was I gonna say? Okay, so you review comics. And what are some of the most memorable comics that you've reviewed or reviews? Maybe not the comics were that positively memorable, but you know what I mean.
I try to make most of them as memorable as possible. I always approach it from the angle of if this was my last episode, I have to make it as glorious and funny as I can. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Probably most memorable that always seems to just come right to the forefront in my mind is Bimbo's In Time. God, that was painful. That was a donation. It's just so ineptly made. It's a serious contender for worst comic book I've ever read in my life.
Oh, but it sounds so good by the title.
Oh, of course. What's better is it's a movie tie-in.
What?
Yeah.
Maybe I missed that.
There is an actual movie called Bimbo's In Time. In fact, someone sent me what may be the movie. I haven't had the guts to put it in my DVD player yet.
Oh man, maybe that would be awesome if you could get someone to review that, or if you review it. I don't know if you, because you guys at the guy with the glasses site seem to share a lot with each other, because you know I've seen a little bit of crossover here and there.
Yep, and there's more, and there's definitely going to be more on the way. But I've considered reviewing it, and I've thought about a crossover between one or two people who could probably help me review it. But at the same time, I'm just like I don't have time to watch it, and I think I would be deeply ashamed after I had finished. To the point
you'd just be rocking back and forth in the shower. Yeah,
exactly.
Can't believe I watched it.
And of course, there's always. Possibly my favorite character in the whole wide world, Snowflame, the man powered by cocaine.
That was the most awesomest episode, and I'm glad I saw that one because I went home and I had to watch it again.
That one was actually originally a text review that I turned into video format, and I am so happy I did because I just love Snowflame so much. He's so. It's this wonderful mixture of bad and awesome.
Badly awesome.
Yes.
Awesomely bad.
And I'm so sad that they've never revived the character. Never done anything more with him.
I want that to eventually be public domain, so we could just use it. Oh, boy.
The Adventures of Snowflame.
Sounds like you'll have to make a cameo in your work somewhere.
Mm.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, there's so copyright sort of things and whatever, but
I think it was either late 80s or early 90s, so I can't remember. So it's probably going to be a while before he lapses into the public domain.
Yeah. Oh, well.
We can dream.
We can dream. So, obviously, you're into trade comics. And at Marvel, DC, Image, or whatever. I have no idea what's on. I know Marvel and DC exist. That's about it.
That's my primary reading category anyway, yeah.
So, well, okay, I wanted to touch on just a little bit. There's been a show I've been wanting to do eventually where we look at, like, the old, like, timed out copyrights for a bunch of, like, the old superheroes, like the original...
Like Golden Age characters?
Yeah, like even the original Daredevil, like that costume design is supposedly public domain right now.
Yep.
And then I have a couple of people that might be interested in being on that show. If I managed to pull that together, do you think that'd be a show you'd be interested to be on?
I might be. The problem is I only know so much about the Golden Age characters. It helps that that both DC and Marvel have been working to revive some of those licenses and bring them back. And the nice thing, of course, is that since they're public domain, anyone can create their own stories about them. But I feel sad that I haven't read a whole bunch of them, like Green Llama or the original Daredevil or there was this pirate guy, I can't remember. I think Black Sword or something.
Do you know if they're repackaging like the old ones, like the not just like making a new story, but actually, you know,
reprinting them?
Yeah, reprinting like a compilation or something like that of the original of like the old school ones.
I haven't seen any compilations. Mostly, it's new stories.
Hmm.
Like they're bringing them back. Like for example, J. Michael Straczynski did a. I don't think he's finished it yet. A series called The 12, where 12 older Golden Age properties that had lapsed into public domain, he brought them back in the same manner that Captain America got brought back. They were frozen or cryogenically frozen since World War II, and bam, they're brought back, and they have to cope with the modern world.
That would actually be kind of interesting.
Mm.
Throw some of them for a loop. I wonder if any would turn evil, though.
God damn this world today!
In fact, the last scene in the first issue is since the story is told in flashback, the last scene is one of the characters killing one of the other ones.
Okay.
Aww.
Yeah.
Can't wait till they bring back the Wizza. That would be great. He's a real character in the Golden Age. Those Golden Age heroes were so cool. They were just like simple guys. They didn't have a lot of fancy stuff.
Exactly. You put on a mask and a gun, and you bam, you're a superhero.
Who's that simple?
Or like moonlight passes through a prism and gives you magic powers of some kind or something.
Wasn't that the Silver Age where all the crazy stuff happened? Or
no, that was definitely the Golden Age. Didn't we?
Well, yeah. both the Gold and Silver Age had their own kind of weird origin stories. The Silver Age was focusing more on science fiction style origins because science fiction comics were all the rage at the time.
There was always
why you had Batman fighting UFOs for the life.
Some of the origins of the Legion of Superheroes were kind of fun. Those were in the Silver Age. Some of those are really weak.
Off the way.
Yeah. Some of those are just really, really strange. Kind of powers. I think Night Owl was one. She had super strength, but only when it was dark outside.
Yeah.
So she was kind of useless if there was any light around.
Can't go out in the day.
At least she didn't have sparkle tits. Just look at it on that.
Well, I mean, if you ever
and
go
of course,
to a
Matter Eater Lad, the most badass and powerful superhero of all time.
Matter Eater Lad.
Mm-hmm.
From the planet Bismol. Seriously.
No, seriously, his power is that he can consume anything. And when you think about that, that's a glorious power because he can absorb radiation. He can consume steel. Basically, he's super strong and super resilient. It's really a matter of how can you be creative with these powers.
Right.
Not so much with Arm Fall Off Boy, but still.
that's not as exciting.
Well, if you're like, you know, tied up, maybe. But then after that, I don't know.
And after that, you're fucking useless.
It's a flesh wound.
It's interesting. A lot of these powers were like, at least in Legion of Superheroes, a lot of these powers were like a power a race had on their planet.
Mm.
Like turning to stone. Everyone could turn to stone.
Yeah. So they were nothing special where they originally lived.
Yeah, but when they yep. left their planet, they could join the Legion of Superheroes and, you know, be
famous.
Which
really just tells you it's all about environment.
Really,
if you're not special, move.
although the people who turned into stone, the joke with them was that they could turn to stone, but it was basically they were basically sleeping anyway. Basically,
yes.
They were stone, but they couldn't actually move or do anything. They were just basically a statue.
Yeah, exciting.
Now, I guess then they could be used as a battering ram or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sounds like a substitute hero to me.
Well, it's the gargoyle complex, you know?
Oh. Brings in Freudian theory to this.
Anyway, we're going
to my favorite Silver Age was Iron Man. Good old Tony Stark, whose power was to be rich and drunk.
Hey, yeah.
that was my fave.
Once again, booze saves all.
Tony Stark makes you feel he's cool exec with a heart of steel.
But as Iron Man, all jets aflame, he's fighting and fighting with repulsor rays. Amazing armor, that's Iron Man. A blazing armor, that's Iron Man.
I'm so just happy. Saying.
Please tell me you just made that up.
No, that's the song for the cartoon. It's Iron Man. It's great. It's in the movie too. You know, like a phone ring, like a ringtone. They have the.
All right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break.
On that sour note.
And when we come back.
Broken note. Wrong note. Didn't quite get that note right. Didn't hit that note.
Okay, we're going on break.
On that note.
The Webcomic Beacon is hosted on the Rampage Network, a webcomics host and community at rampagenetwork.com. Don't forget that we broadcast our shows live. Tune in on Sundays at 3 p.m. Eastern at webcomicbeacon.com/live. Join our live chat room. Visit our forums for unified discussions on latest topics, collaborations, projects, events, or contests at webcomicbeacon.com/forum.
For me, it was all about the Captain America theme song. When Captain America throws his mighty shield.
That was so bad.
Yes.
Oh, that's why you got shot, you know.
I can't remember what Thor's was. What was Thor? It had Thor in that series, too.
Yeah, there was a Thor one. I can't remember.
Nobody cared. It was like, wow, they resurrected a god. Okay. It's moved on.
So, Fez, what else you got for me?
All right, okay, so. Jeez, how long is the... Well, the Webcomic Beacon's been going for over 2 years. Before that, I was doing my own webcomic reviews. My shtick was, because you needed to have a shtick, was I made 60-second reviews. And I called it 2 cents in 60 seconds. I think I did like 20 of them or something like that. It was kind of fun, but, you know, and thinking about, you know, just reviewing webcomics after a while, or just, you know, just thinking about all the different review sites, a dime a dozen, basically. You got to have some sort of shtick. And one of the things that always annoyed me back when I actually started doing this was people constantly just doing bad reviews, just like purposely trying to find some crappy comic, which is probably just done by some guy making as a hobby or something like that, or it's obviously bad. And just, and then they just start attacking the people's personality for like no reason. It's like, this guy's such a douche and da 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 da, and it shows in his da da da, and all this and that. Let's see, what was that? Your comic is bad and you should feel bad? That pissed me off so much. And it's just like, I don't see the legitimacy in some of these reviews where there's just constantly, constantly bad, bad, bad. And I figure you should be promoting good stuff. And then it's like, you know, then it's been a couple of years later. And then it's just like, you know what? I give up. You know, hey, it's for entertainment value, maybe not ultra, you know, was it Herbert? Who's those famous movie reviewers? God damn it, I was on a roll too.
Michael Medved and Jeffrey Lyons.
You mean
Lyons?
Like Ebert?
The fat and skinny guy.
Siskel and Ebert.
Yeah.
Siskel and Ebert.
Do you know, it's like, you know, they had, you know, there was like a range and a variety to them. Now it just seems like basically any type of reviewing is almost basically find the worst that you can find and make it entertaining. I mean, is that what you is it? Am I too far off in thinking that's just what it is these days, and there's no way around it?
It's mostly negative, but that's because honestly, the negative reviews are tend to be funnier.
Yeah,
and it is primarily entertainment motivated by the fact that if you find something frustrating and completely annoying to the point where you just want to pull your hair out, it's funny seeing people be frustrated by these kind of things and having to be creative in ways of expressing their frustration.
Right.
For example, the angry video game nerd, his shtick for the longest time is to swear and curse and be just generally pissed off at video games. And one of the funniest moments, and it's easy for people to say that his shtick gets old after a while, but I think but one of the funniest things that I've ever seen was his recent review in December or January of Winter Games, where after a frustrating time with the game, he sees a message on the back of it saying, "Do not dip this in alcohol. Do not expose to extreme temperatures. Do not hit. Do not throw," or something like that. And there's just this brief shot of him just like staring at it in anger, and then proceeds to do every single one of those things. And it's one of the funniest damn things I've ever seen, and it's just great.
Anger is funny. There's nothing funny about, "This was great."
And it's another reason why I don't tend to review good comics is that it's not fun for me. The thing is, people come to my show to get laughs, and it is honestly not fun for me to write a review of a good comic. Sure, I try to promote good comics when I can. When I say it's like this good comic, you should go read 52. 52 is awesome. You should go read. I did a holiday special because people were always asking me for comic recommendations, and I just gave a list of comics they could take a look at. But it is honestly difficult for me to write jokes about good comics and to find humor in that and to be entertaining. And as I'm writing and while I'm editing, I'm just like totally drained because I'm like, this is not fun. This is gonna be the thing that people that it is the death of me because people will not be entertained. and I'll experiment around sometimes. I did a tribute to the comic Blue Beetle a while back.
Right.
And recently I did an experiment where I decided to take a look at X-Men number 1, which was the highest selling comic of all time. And I decided just to see, is it really that good? And yeah, it turned out to be pretty okay. But I don't think it was my strongest episode. And I think I could probably done better if the comic had been just really awful.
I would like to see more tribute specials like that, because then it's like you're not just limited to, I mean, obviously overall you got a good character, but you know they're also going to have some really crappy stuff too. So, and it's, I don't know, I think it, like throwing something like that in there every once in a while, I don't know, it just seems like a good thing to do in my opinion.
No, I hear you. There are reviewers of good material out there, and there are mixed reviews. Yahtzee for all the way his shtick is talking really fast and then making fun of games. He gives good reviews reviews of good games all the time and says this is good, this is why it's good, and still is capable of making jokes. Or Lee from Still Gaming, or Dina from the Film Den, they've done reviews of good material too. Heck, even the Nostalgia Critic has done reviews of good games and said this is why it's good. Same thing goes for the Angry Video Game Nerd. Sometimes he'll go and do a classic game, and his frustration comes from the fact that while they're good games, they're also really frustrating games.
Oh yeah. do you ever worry about, like, actual industry people, you know, seeing your stuff and maybe contacting you? Or is that, like...
I have actually been contacted by a couple of people before. One of which was the writer, not of Silent Hill Dying Inside, but of Silent Hill Sinner's Reward, which I did as a special, which was a good Silent Hill comic, and I praised it for 4 minutes. And he contacted me and said, thanks, I was I'm the review. I thought the jokes were funny, and that I'm thankful that you did it. And he sent me a whole bunch of other comics I could review at some point if I wanted to.
Yeah, swag is always nice.
Yep, and two other people that I know of, one of who, actually a couple more, Gail Simone watches my show. She's the writer of Secret Six, Wonder Woman, Birds of Prey.
Nice.
You probably, since you don't read mainstream comics, you probably don't know any of
that. Yeah, I don't.
I don't read those.
I've heard of them. I've heard of
them. I only read weird crap that nobody's ever heard of.
Yeah, but so. she posted on her forum that she has discovered my show recently and loves it, and I'm just like squeeing over that because I'm like, yeah. Gail Simone, I love that. The cover artist for Nightcat number one has seen my review and thought it was hilarious.
Nice.
It helps that I didn't insult, that I did not make fun of his cover.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine that that would have.
But yeah, I'm not terribly afraid of industry people contacting me because for one thing, I try to avoid most of the time making fun of the creators themselves. I only do
most
it if I truly think they deserve it. For example, Frank Miller, his stuff is just so awful, and I've seen script excerpts where he specifically writes like, "Yeah, let's show TNA here. It'll drive the readers wild. Yeah, she's so sexy. Yeah, it's all about titillation and
it's
all that
so
fun
terrible.
Stuff." And I was like, "Ugh, this is creepy." Or Gary Brodsky, the guy behind Sultry Teenage Super Foxes. That guy is pure scumbag egg all the way.
Or Rob Liefeld.
I honestly try not to make fun of Rob Liefeld that much, but the work itself is just so bad.
Yeah.
I try not to make personal attacks. It's all about the work itself, and that's the thing. I'm a critic. I'm trying to make fun of the work itself and not the person behind it.
I'm kind of curious because like a lot of the stuff that we're reviewing of his stuff is mostly from, was it the 80s?
90s mostly.
The 90s. Okay, does he? Yeah, you're right, 90s. Does he still have work?
I mean, yes.
What is his current stuff? Is it just as bad or has he improved?
It hasn't improved. Well, it's brighter. I'll say that. That's because modern techniques make it so it looks shinier. But at the same time, he still has the same anatomical problems. He still scratches lines in everywhere.
That's my style.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the age-old excuse.
Most of the time, Rob is doing covers and the occasional graphic novel, but nothing much. He does a lot of conventions. I almost met him once. I was tempted to go up and talk to him, but I decided not to. Because what would I say?
What about one of the old school guys like Gil Kane? What do you think about his work?
Gil Kane. Oh, I can't. I think I might have met Gil Kane once. I can't remember.
Really? Wow.
Yes. I might be wrong about that. I might be thinking of someone else.
I have to admit, I was not a fan of his later work because it was so plastic. I mean, it had a fluidity. There was nothing rigid about it. Everything was like liquid, which is kind of cool in some ways.
But kind of inappropriate in others.
Well, I don't know. I just never cared for it. It was just a style I never cared for. And I got like an old Green Lantern, like old school Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not the Hal Jordan, but the guy before him, Alan Scott. And Gil Kane had drawn a lot of those. And you could kind of still see it, although it was more rigid. In his early drawing, in his later drawing, he was very fluid and plasticky type style. I don't know. What about? I'm trying to think of some of these guys from the 80s that I really liked, like Perez and
I would so love to meet George Perez someday.
Yeah, I love him. He's awesome. Keith Geffen, where he'd use the heavy markers on on Legion or something. It's like he's drawing with a with a thick black
with
Sharpie.
A Sharpie. Yeah.
Or Kurt Swan. Now, there's somebody I think loved Kurt Swan's work, especially when Dave Hunt was inking for him. Mm-hmm. I absolutely loved their work. But of course, now people look at it and it's, you know, it's not like Spawn or something, so they turn their nose up at it. But it's so clean and so crisp and so nice to look at.
Yeah. Well, most people have rejected 90s style artwork by this point. It has gotten to the point where this is just so terrible. They refuse to touch it with a 10-foot pole. Other times, there's been kind of a stylistic change. Michael Turner's artwork was really big a couple years ago. His style of just really super skinny was popular for some ungodly reason. But yeah, it's shifting attitudes all the time about what is considered good or not. And artists tend to evolve and change their own styles over time, like Gil Kane. I remember I've seen Dan Juergens, some of his work in the early 90s, then compared it to today. And while there is it's a very subtle shift, if you can see it, basically some of the more extreme kind of 90s style artwork is slowly, you know, just gets toned down a bit and it becomes passable. I've seen actual works of Rob Liefeld that actually looked pretty decent. The thing is, what happened was the inker fixed a lot of the problems.
Oh boy.
I remember I was at a point with the Superman artist. I could tell who had drawn it. I knew that was Kurt Swan. I knew that was Wayne Boring. Yeah. I knew that was so and so and so and so. And even now when I look at him, yeah, I know that's that guy. Maybe I don't quite remember his name, but yeah, that's that guy because he always drew Superman that way.
Yeah, I remember. I think I remember an old story. I might be getting the names wrong in this, but I think Jack Kirby drew Superman for a couple issues, and they actually had someone else draw his head because it was just such a different style that they thought readers would hate it.
I could see that too. I think I remember seeing some of those. Anytime he would have to go battle Darkseid, I was like, oh God.
Here we go.
You got stuff again. Ugh. But yeah, there were definitely artists that I followed. And Swan and Hunt were definitely a team that I followed just because I liked the way they drew so much.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think, at first blush, if you don't read comics, you wouldn't think that you could tell the difference. But really, you can. It's all different styles and things. It's quite marvelous, really.
Oh, yeah.
So that, going towards that realistic end of the art stick, though, versus the cartoony stick, and
that's the stick I get beaten with all the time.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that. Is like, is there anything? I mean, because it's like, you may be able to tell subtle style differences here and there, but when you look at like Marvel and DC, it's just like you just see like that. Oh, that looks like a trade comic art. Yeah, that's trade comic art. That's that realistic muscle sort of thing. I don't know what you're saying.
Well, Marvel and DC actually have. I don't think it's official these days, but they did have what was called the house style, where you could tell something was a Marvel book and something was a DC book based off of the artwork, because there was just, I can't remember exactly what the qualifications were, but there was just something different about how they look. And these days, you can actually tell most of the time when what looks like a Marvel book and what looks like a DC book. DC books tend to be, I think, a bit more colorful, a bit brighter in terms of their color palette. Marvel books tend to be heavier on inks and darker colors.
They're more
brooding. All depends on what you read and who's coloring it, I'd say.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I never followed Marvel at all. I always bought the DC comics. I like their heroes.
I'm mostly a DC guy myself.
Yeah.
The only time I bought Marvel comics was when Iron Man had the red and silver armor. In the late 80s there. I think it was the late 80s. Those are the only, and they had such a great artist for it.
Yeah.
The team doing it was fantastic. So I would buy them, and then they changed the team, so I was like, meh. Stop buying Iron Man.
I was an Iron Man nerd. Other than that, it was all DC. So, yeah. There isn't much I can say about Marvel beyond that.
I know the least. I can remember. Well, okay, three. But in the past, I've read I can remember that I've read two different comic books. That's it. Just one was a Transformers Beast Wars thing. I can remember several scenes of it. It ended with this girl that was like getting like cybernetic implants or some crap. She was in a hospital bed or something like that. I had no idea what was going on. And there was this other one. It was Supergirl number one, where one of them. You know,
did you have the headband?
No, it was. I mean, I think it was like a chest shot on the cover, and then like the first several pages was. I'm guessing a girl just got raped, and she's washing herself off in the shower.
Linda Danvers. That was Peter David's Supergirl series. That was actually a really good series. It's just it was built on a lot of the stuff that was going on in the Superman books at the time.
Okay.
And her origin story was not exactly as concrete and easy to follow.
Yeah, I wasn't entirely sure about that, but I tried, you know, but I just, and it was expensive, too. It was like, what, $5 an issue or something like that? I don't have a
I don't think it got it quite as that high, considering most comics these days are about like $3 to $4.
Three, maybe four if it's cool.
Yeah, but I was thinking it was still an allowance then, so.
I've said it before, I'll say it again, it just is a terrible travesty what they keep doing with Legion of Superheroes, where they just change the whole thing every 3 or 4 years. They scrap everything they've built up and then relaunch it and relaunch it again and then again.
Well, don't you think there's a danger in... See, one of the things that, aside from price, the other thing that would turn me off of like trade comics is the enormous amount of continuity and the fact that they're all in the same goddamn world. It's like you can't keep anything straight. It's too daunting to even get into. Even web comics, they have like 1,000, 2,000 strip archives or even more than that. It's like, yeah, I'll bookmark it. I'll try to catch up on the archives later. I never do. My to-do bookmarks are just increasing in size and I never get anything done.
So. Well, it all depends on how – well, I think the trick is I was talking about this the other day and actually on another podcast. The trick is not to just reject continuity. It happens. You'll alienate longtime fans if you try to abandon it.
Right.
The trick is to tell good stories while at the same time not relying upon the continuity to be complete – to alienate new readers. And the way you do this is simply having a good story.
Right.
The one I always like to promote is JLA/Titans, The Technus Imperative. It's not my first comic. It was not my first comic. I had been reading Nightwing for a while. But when I first read that, I had never read any previous books involving the Titans.
Right.
I had little to no background, no knowledge about the team. I knew, you know, your basic big hitters, your Batmans, your Supermans, your Nightwings. But I didn't know who half these characters were. But by the time the first third of the series was complete, I was emotionally invested in all the characters. They had strong characterization. The stakes were high. The frickin' moon was being pulled out of orbit. You don't get
that's a bit of a stake, yeah.
And I was able to discern a lot of the character interactions and their relationships to each other, and they explained the backstory in story in a way that made sense, and I was able to follow it. And it was just a great story, and that got me to start actually collecting comics as a hobby. And it made me more interested in learning about the older stories and reading the older stories. A good story that has continuity in it should make you want to go back and read all this stuff, not because you need to read it, but because you want to read it. You want to know more about what happened.
Right.
Yeah, I felt that way about Legion when I first discovered Legion of Superheroes. And I still would like to see more of that Mike Grell 1970s Legion. But I only saw bits of it. And at the time, they were printing these little digests of Adventure and Legion and some of these other things. These little Archie Andrews-type digests you see at the checkout. Mm-hmm. And they had, like, the origin of the Legion, and they were reprinting those. It was fantastic, and I would just grab them every time they came out. But, of course, they don't really do that so much anymore.
Well, Marvel still makes Digest comics. It's just there are less of them, and they go with different characters.
Yeah, yeah.
For example, Runaways has actually been pretty popular in Digest size, I've seen.
Yeah. But even then, though, it's not as easy to find them. It's not as though, you know, they're popping up on, these days. I know that whenever I've actually, you know, wanted one of the digests, I've had to go in and special order it. We just don't have them out here.
I see them at Barnes & Noble, but even then, like I said, it's not very many of them.
Yeah.
I'm trying to check to see if there's any questions in our chat rooms. To see if there's any questions. I think there's a question for me. This person just has a question. If you could take over the writing in any trade comic, what would it be? Same for the art. And I don't know if any of us claim to have any of that level of skill. I guess.
Any trade comic I could take over?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Titans. I want to write Titans.
Now that would be interesting. Would you go back to the 80s Titans when they first put them together?
I would actually go kind of a Legion of Superheroes route. There's always going to be a percentage of the fan base that's pissed off that you're not using some characters. And I think a closer analogy would probably be more like Justice League Unlimited. I would bring all the Titans, all previous Titans together. I would make it a book that while it has a core focus of characters, you'll do the occasional one-shot of other superheroes. You'd basically bring everyone together. And frankly, from a logical standpoint, just in-universe, it makes sense. The villains keep uniting together to create super powerful big 30-man teams. Why can't the heroes do that? Why haven't they organized together to protect themselves and to protect each other and just be a larger force for good? Strength in numbers and all that fun stuff. And yes, it can be difficult to read a book that has like 25 characters in it, but if you write it correctly, and like I said, focus on a core group for the most part and give the occasional one shot to everyone else being a supporting character, then it will work. And I think it would be great, and I would love to do that.
I think the sort of 80s, I want to say it was 80s Justice League, where you had Booster Gold and Blue Beetle and Guy Gardner and Black Canary and all that. That was That really was a pretty good book, and it was drawn very well too. I remember
Kevin McGuire was doing the artwork at the time.
Yeah, something like that. The Justice Society. I think they've done pretty well with that in these recent books. The Justice Society and
JSA's had a bit of a few problems based around one character, I'd say, that had potential, but they've completely screwed it over. Magog. When they first introduced the guy, I really liked him. I like the idea of a. I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you. Sorry.
No, that's all right.
They brought him in. He's a descendant of FDR.
Now I haven't read this, so that makes me laugh.
It was actually really well written, and he was a soldier, but he was a nice guy. But then they did an arc where they decided to tie it into the Elseworlds series Kingdom Come, which I thought was great. I liked the storyline itself, but they made him into Magog, and now suddenly he's an asshole who's a stereotypical soldier. You know, we've got to attack everything and be proactive and kill and blah blah blah. And he wasn't like that when he was first introduced. And as a result, he just comes off as an asshole. No one likes him. And they split the team into two books. And it's more, and while it's still okay, it's not as good as it used to be.
I'll tell you one I do miss is All-Star Squadron. Because Roy Thomas, I think Dan Jurgens did the art for that. I could be wrong. But I know they actually had a love of the Golden Age heroes. And it showed in every book. That they had researched them and they gave a damn, and that was a really good book until the crisis, and they just dropped it.
Just shame.
Alrighty, well, here's a good spot for me to take a break, as we are running out of tape, so we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Have news, questions, comments, or advertising inquiries? Transmit them to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or dial 1-320-310-0922.
to there.
I don't think I'd rewrite anything. I'd just get rid of certain plot lines. That's all which I would do.
Which ones in particular would you like to get rid of?
The one I think I would most like to get rid of was the whole reboot, the Heroes Reborn. Can we get rid of that?
If we can make Heroes Reborn disappear.
No, I mean, I want to wipe it out of history. If we can pretend that never happened.
Some people
I know
do.
I will feel better.
For those who don't know what Heroes Reborn was, in the mid-90s, they decided after the Image split with Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee and a whole bunch of other artists, they then later decided, okay, we're going to reboot some titles like Captain America, Fantastic Four, Iron Man, give them whole new continuities, but we're going to give them over to Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee and Mark Silvestri and just have them go nuts. And
yeah, so
it was
they killed
terrible.
Them, but then had them exist in an alternate universe. And that's how they kept them going. It was crap.
It only lasted like 12 issues in all the various series at most. And then they brought them back in Heroes Return.
Heroes Returns, yeah.
Yeah. And they brought them back and people loved Heroes Return because they hated Heroes Reborn.
I wept every episode.
The only good thing to come out of that, from what I've seen, is the female Bucky of that universe, who is actually now a character in the mainstream Marvel. When they decided to bring back Heroes Reborn for the 10-year anniversary, they actually hired Rob Liefeld to draw it again too. They brought the female Bucky over to this universe, and now she's on her own, and she's kind of, I think she's the book's called Hero Without a World.
Oh, nice.
Oh,
they've abandoned her.
Now what about in the chat room? They mentioned Uncle Scrooge, and I was thinking of those again in the 80s, where they started to draw new Donald Duck and Uncle Scrooge, and Don Rose is the creator that comes to mind. He just dived right into the history of that character and really took his cue from Carl Barks and started drawing new adventures of Donald Duck and Uncle Scrooge and all this sort of thing. Have you seen any of those?
I'm ashamed to say that I have not read any of the Scrooge comics or the old Disney comics. I'm really sad that I haven't read any of those.
Well, the Don Rosa stuff's in hardcover. That's all been put together now.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Disney kind of screwed him over, so he's not working on any of that anymore.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but they had a really good run. They brought in some new artists. Dan Gips, Jipes. From the Netherlands, I think, or somewhere around there. He was another one that was able to capture that Carl Barks style and yet be an individual at the same time. But Don Rose has done Herculean work to bring new adventures out and things like that. At least he did for quite a while. That's worth your time. If you like the characters, that's well worth the time.
We have a comment.
We'll try to take a look.
We have a comment in the chat room. So, Uncle Donald, Uncle Scrooge, where the hell is that deadbeat father of those three boys?
I think the parents are probably dead. Disney
well, they
enjoys
don't talk,
that.
They don't
Disney
talk about,
does enjoy that.
They don't talk about the father of Huey, Dewey, and Louie, but the sister, I think, is Donald's sister is named Clarabelle or something. And because
are they Clarabelle's kid? No, Clarabelle's a cow.
Clarabelle's a cow, you're right. But anyway, the...
That's a
Henrietta
up
something.
Up
I think it's but the kids were such hellions. They
she
were such hellions that they sent the kids to live with Donald.
Because he was such a good role model.
Oh yeah,
more just get rid of them.
Yeah,
because they were horrible pranksters.
So keep this in mind, boys and girls. In the Disney universe, mothers are either dead or abandoning.
It could be.
That's the way it works.
If not, they will be.
They either hate you and get rid of you, or
because
they
Mickey,
die.
Mickey has a couple nephews, too, and you never hear about their parents.
No.
He has a couple of nephews, and you see them.
You know, I'm guessing it's just that they don't, it was a court thing, so maybe not officially. I mean, maybe he really is the father, but, you know.
Maybe this is what we need. We have webcomicers out there that are listening. That's the point. Somebody go out there and create these horrible horrible backgrounds for these poor boys.
You know, I'm certain
get the shit suit out of you by Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's the problem.
That would you'd be covered by parody.
You'd think so, but no. If they wanted to, any company that has enough money will sue your ass to the point where you will lose.
Yeah, Disney's pretty.
You'll even lose while winning. Yeah, it won't matter.
So this week on the webcomicbeacon.com website, for those who don't know, every Sunday we have a show, which is almost every Sunday. We go over who has our top advertising spots on our Project Wonderful ads. And this week we have Beware the Slumpy at bewaretheslumpy.com. We also have Sailor Sun at sailorsun.org. And by the same person who does Sailor Sun, I Dream of a Genie Bottle at geniebottle.com. That's who's advertising here on the Beacon this week. And if you'd like to purchase a sponsorship spot, go to webcomicbeacon.com/advertise for more information. Just had to get that out of the way. So,
of course.
So we, oh yeah, by the way, those who sponsor an episode of the Webcomic Beacon will actually get a banner ad posted on the blog post itself. So it's like doubly advertising. Plus we'll use that money to advertise on the Webcomic Beacon. So we get even more traffic because that's, you know, that's how things roll around here. You know, you have to buy advertising. So we have to
advertising.
Yes. Webcomic reviewing, which we've not really comic reviewing, which we've not talked about a whole lot. So, we talked about just comics, basically. Which, hey, it's all good.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
No, it's quite all right. I mean, we hardly ever stay
on topic. We were reviewing comics.
Yeah,
it's a reviewer.
It is very hard to just sit and review even just web comics, which is why we actually cut out. Taking requests in for reviewing comics just because it's so much extra.
It was a lot of work.
It was a lot of work, yes. And
sometimes it hurts.
It was wasn't the most favorite parts of our shows either, so but
yeah, webcomic reviewing, the thing is it also has to be judged by very different standards than a print comic. When you're releasing, like I said, part of it is the hobby angle to it. When you're releasing a traditional print comic, it's supposed to be a product created by a professional company. It's like reviewing like a refrigerator or something. It is a professional product. It's meant it is commercial. It is meant to be reviewed by the mass public.
Yes.
Whereas a webcomic, it could be a very personal project, and as a result, they might not necessarily know how to draw people.
Right. But there are a lot of really great webcomics out there, and some which are way more deserving of an audience and even sales than they actually get. And
definitely.
And you could definitely say that they could definitely be held at a different level because they are holding themselves at a different level of, well, essentially professionalism. I mean, you know, some people may talk crap about the something awful webcomicers, and you have to admit, a lot of them have some of the really great webcomics out there. Some of the frequenters of the webcomic thread, for those who may not know what we're talking about, of the something awful forums. And of course, you know, there are more cutthroat, I would have to say, webcomicer group.
I just have to laugh. Because back in the day when I was when I was still drawing Lightbringer for the longest time, and back when I had enormous ego problems, some could say I still have enormous ego problems. The Something Awful forumers hated Lightbringer with a passion.
Wow.
just would insult it all the time. Think I was completely insane. So,
did you end up getting banned?
I'm sorry.
Did you end up getting banned?
I was never real. I was never an active participant in the forums because, on a philosophical basis, I didn't want to spend $10 to join a forum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But on the few chances that I was actually able to read the posts, it was kind of disheartening to see people just kind of like bashing me left and right.
Right.
But I just have to laugh because kind of the jokes. I wouldn't necessarily say the jokes on them, considering I'm, you know, fairly successful now.
But it's not particularly with that comic, though.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't have to do with Lightbreaker, but still.
There's
but they didn't crush you.
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
They didn't crush your spirits. They almost crushed mine because I have such a different aspect when it comes to webcomics. More of the hobbyist angle, and that's just not what they're about there. And so I eventually stopped lurking, which is sad because I loved a lot of the conversations that were going on there. It's just
it was good for your psychology to stop lurking. Because they got under your skin a lot.
Yeah, and several episodes of the show were derived from that. Yeah, yeah. There was that one episode that I did where I just needed a bitch because I was just so pissed off. And it's the Fess is a Whiny Baby episode. And I warned people, you probably shouldn't listen to this show. But I just needed to get it out. But there are a lot of good people there. There's some assholes there too, but there's a lot of good people there. So.
Oh yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
When I would do the reviews, I would always try to make it instructive rather than just hateful.
Yeah.
It's not easy to do sometimes.
Yeah, it is. But you know, if you're a webcomic and you have a donate money thing here and you probably should know whether or not you really deserve to have that tip jar there. I'd say once you start asking or begging for money or having anything for sale, I think that puts you up to a level where you should expect to get ridiculed. If you just putting it up there, well, you don't really have anything. You know, maybe then I can see absolutely no reason for people just to go after you. Once you start thinking you deserve money by putting that up there, I mean, I'm not going to call names out, but once you put that up there and you start thinking you deserve money, some of you need to be brought down a notch a little bit. Myself included, you know, and I have been. So
I'm
people
on the
have
fence
to read my
that.
Comic before they can put it down.
I'm on the fence about that because on one hand, it can be difficult to run a comic, and they're not like, and as long as they're not like actively begging,
right.
Yeah.
For donations,
you just have the link there.
Donations.
Yeah.
One of the people have asked me if there's any way they can donate to me, and I just no, I don't want any donations. Well, except for bad comics to review, because I feel like I should be presenting an actual product for people to purchase, which is right. What I do with my e-comic Revolution of the Mask, or just by watching the videos, I get advertising revenue based off of the pre-roll and the little ads that pop up on the bottom of the screen.
Right. Since we're already touching on this, so one of the things I'm trying to write up an article on how to make a decent webcomic website, and I think I got off a tangent. I'm still looking for peer reviews for it, so make sure it's a little bit more rounded. But one of the things I touched on was the donation button, and I think that anybody who has a donation button should offer like a wallpaper with it, because it seems a little bit more justifiable for one that you're offering something for a donation, and also I think it's also good. It's better because it's more enticing. And usually,
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Both from a marketing perspective and from just in general, it seems like they're actually paying for something instead of just asking for charity.
Right. Mark, Tanya, what do you think?
I don't necessarily think that you have to. If people want to give you money, okay. But
I've never drawn the damn wallpaper.
For the most part, I always offered something in response for donations. So I don't know. It just seems nice. I almost offered it. It felt more like a thank you. Like, hey, you gave me money. Thanks. Here, have this thing. You know.
Should I bring the Anglicon? Let me see.
I'm not bringing any of my own stuff. PenguinCon.
Oh, we'll bring us some stuff just in case. Just like a little bit.
I might bring all those damn t-shirts and just give them away to people for fuck's sake. Anyway.
That's what I would do with I have to make some shirts. I still haven't done that. I have to get some made.
Let's see. I'm checking the email for the Webcomic Beacon. That's right. If you want to email us, it's webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. And let's see here. We have a couple of milestones. Times Like This at timeslikethis.com has hit 300 strips. And speaking of webcomics that the Something Awful guys didn't particularly care for, to put it nicely, Sarah Zero hits 500 pages. So congratulations on that. Tara from Galaxian at GalaxianComics.com says that she's been nominated for a 2010 Joe Shuster Award for Outstanding Canadian Webcomic.
Oh, that's awesome. She deserves it, too.
Yeah, she does really good inks. And I tried coloring her comic once, and it's still pretty good. It stands on its own as far as just inks. And so there will be a public ceremony in Toronto on the evening of Saturday, June 5th, 2010. So people can check that out at joeschusterawards.com and support her if you'd like. And I think that's about it for the news that we've been receiving so far. If you have a milestone or an anniversary, go ahead and send us an email. And checking the chat rooms one last time to take a look at how everyone's going. Because sometimes we get some news.
If you're asking about Sonic comics, no, I won't review them.
No!
Sonic comics are seriously the thing I get asked to review more than anything else.
I think it's just because everyone hates them. So
no, actually, I have had times where like a peripheral comment on a video will get people into a heated debate about Sonic comics. Like 50 comments talking about a storyline they liked or didn't like, even though it had nothing to do with the video itself.
Hey, speaking of comics, you know, hence the show. Okay, at FallCon last year, there was like free comic book day stuff was being given out. And remember, one of them was a Supergirl comic. It was drawn in a cartoony style, only kind of weird. But it was like
Adventures in the Eighth Grade, I believe.
No, it was. Was that what it is? Where she
might have been.
Yeah, I actually read that because I was interested in the art. I thought, cool, some new type of art. And I'm, like, reading it. First of all, I understand she's a grade schooler, so her costume has to kind of, I guess, cover some stuff up, but it still is horrible.
Kind of has to?
Well, yeah, it does, but it's still... She's, like, wearing a freaking skirt with leotards underneath, and it's like, what the fuck is that? But the whole premise was just fucking ridiculous, too. It's like, quick, we have to cram a freaking origin story in there. And just like, it's just this big pile of mash. It's just shit. And I just like, oh, she runs away from her parents from Krypton or some bullshit after just, what the fuck? Sorry. I was like, seriously, I'm giving like these comics a chance. Like, oh, check this out. What the fuck? But yeah, okay.
Okie dokie.
See, frustration is funny. I guess. Okay, I'm done.
I will say, actually, Supergirl Cosmic Adventures in the Eighth Grade is actually fairly popular among people.
Oh, God. By who?
People like sparkly who like vampires? Fun comics, because they're sick and tired of all the grimdark stuff out there.
Well, whatever. There you go.
It's like a ray of sunshine amidst comics about little girls being killed. Why, yes, I am still angry about Cry for Justice number 7. Thank you, Brad.
Alrighty. So, Mark, Tanya, I need you guys to stay on after the show. We need to record our audio promo, which I meant to do for the past 3 weeks.
There. Do that.
Yeah. So, I think that's pretty much it for this episode of the Webcomic Beacon. Let's see what we have going on next week. Checking out the calendar really quick. You can check out webcomicbeacon.com/calendar for upcoming episodes. And next week we'll be talking about misappropriating genres. We'll be talking about how some genres get a bad rap and they may not deserve it. But we'll see when we get there. And then on the 4th of April, we'll be doing a co-show with TGT Webcomics Podcast, so tune in for that on, I guess, either site. So good times, And that's all for the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com. This has been Fess of Fessworks.com.
And this is Mark of AutumnLake.com.
This is Tanya of DaisiesAndShit.com.
And this was Lewis Lovehog of Atop the Fourth Wall at atopfourthwall.blogspot.com or thatguywiththeglasses.com. And I just want to thank you guys for having me on.
No problem. Thanks very much for coming on the show again.
No problem. And I'm sorry if I came off as an egotistical prick.
No, I've had worse.
No, that's Fess's job on the show. Don't worry about it.
It's always what I'm afraid of.
That's quite all right.
That's all for now. Tune in next time at webcomicbeacon.com.
I'm gonna say, I'm gonna say, I'm gonna say, I'm gonna say, I'm
gonna say, I'm gonna say, I'm gonna say, I'm gonna say, I'm gonna say, I'm gonna say, I'm
gonna
say, I'm gonna say, I'm gonna say, I'm gonna say,
I'm gonna say,
Nice.
For over 2 years and 100 episodes, the Webcomic Beacon has been a near-weekly podcast by and for novice and... fuck.
By novice fucks.
You know, I almost should change that line if I want to be a little bit more wider audience-y, but I'll go ahead and just say it. For over 2 years and 100 episodes, the Webcomic Beacon has been a near-weekly podcast by and for novice and hobbyist webcomicers.
We've got a fun and casual atmosphere with topical discussions, complete with fun and interesting special guests, not to mention those wacky hosts.
So head on over to the webcomicbeacon.com for live broadcasts, webcomic discussions, antics, advice sharing, and more ball dropping than your local morning radio show.
Awesome. I think we can keep that.
You know, it actually hurt trying not to laugh the whole time.
Thank you. And chat.
Oh my god, they're pain.
Oh god, I'm gonna die. My
funny
lung.
Sounding.
Live broadcasts. Live. All dropping than your local morning radio show.
Oh, fine.